You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and Ignaz Schwinn co-founded the Schwinn Bicycle Company way back in 1895. Today, Schwinn is owned by Pacific Cycle, headquartered in Madison, and the great-grandson of Ignaz joins us now. Richard Schwinn recently retired after nearly three decades of manufacturing high-end bicycles for Waterford Precision Cycles, a company he co-founded. What do you want to know about the Schwinn family's bike-building history and their legacy here in Wisconsin? All right, you can join our conversation by calling in with your questions or thoughts, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Richard Schwinn, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, congratulations on your retirement. And I am kind of curious what it felt like to let that Waterford plant go and to close the doors of Waterford Precision Cycles and call it a career. Take us through the emotions this summer.
Well, this summer capped off a plan that we'd been putting in place for a year, and it was reflected the fact that better than half of our staff was of retirement age. I mean, most of the people who've been part of Waterford have been part of Waterford for 30 years. And so that was one of the chief motivations. And we are a group that has worked very closely together all these years. So we knew that there'd be a point at which either someone would want to rebuild the business from scratch, and we couldn't find anyone really willing to do that, or it was time for us to put Waterford to bed. And I will say, I have been inspired by everyone who's been on our staff, because you know, there are two groups of people. There are groups of people who were looking at retirement, and some of them wanted to get out earlier than we were able to. Some had cut their retirement a little bit short. And then we had people who were not ready for retirement. One of the reasons that we felt that this is a good time is that the job market is as positive now as it probably will be for some time. It's very favorable, and these are highly skilled people. But the thing that inspired me most is that everybody kept their head down and kept working toward this goal of getting every last bike out done, and done extraordinarily well. And one of the things that I've been afraid of is the call that says, oh, I just got your bike, it's got a mistake, and you don't have a factory to fix it, do you? We've been very lucky. They really did an astounding job of getting all those bikes built right and out the door. I will say, it came down to the wire. People were literally pulling equipment out of the building, and we were still packing bikes for the UPS truck to pick up. But we got them all out. We were able to get everybody set up to go. We were in a position to provide a little severance, which is really unusual for a small frame builder. And we're right now, I'm in the process of setting up some facilities to provide ongoing support for our customers in terms of decals and touch-up paint, and hopefully referrals for places that they can get their Waterfords and Gunners restored. So it's still pretty busy. It's still a little cleanup. But,
say, that sounds like a semi-retirement, Richard.
Well, I pass in the tank, and I got projects to do. But I'm almost 70, so it's time to get ready for the next chapter of my life.
What went into the decision to close the Waterford factory as opposed to trying to sell it?
Well, I mean, I won't say we didn't try to sell it.
Okay.
But finding someone who was willing to take on, you know, the obligations that not only of running a factory, but also replacing a bunch of key employees. Hmm. And And I think the people who examined it said, you know, it's probably too much to do. And so we recognize, you know, then people express an interest in doing that, you know, even down to the final days. But every, you know, they finally said, you know, I'd really love to do this. I'd love to do it, but it doesn't make sense. So somebody would have had to come in with sort of an irrational financial sense in order to do this. And that doesn't mean those people don't exist. I mean, you know, someone who buys a $500,000 car is making an irrational. And by the way, this would have been cheaper than that $500,000 automobile. So, you know, it's, the time for advertising is now over. And so we're moving on.
Richard Schwinn, our guest. And Richard, you started Waterford Precision Cycles back in 1994. You bought the former Schwinn Paramount production facility there in Waterford. So before this summer, were you the last Schwinn running a bike manufacturing company?
Yes.
Wow.
The streak is over.
Going back to your great-granddad?
You know, people are going, are you grieving that? And I'm going, it's a long streak. My great-grandfather started in the business in Germany in the 1880s. So I don't know if it went all the way back to 84 or 83, but and I don't think it did. I think he was too young for that. But, you know, that's a long streak. But, you know, the point of our business is not to keep the streak going. The point of our business has been to serve our customers. And I'm proud of the work that we've done through the years. But for a while, every so often I go, oh, the streak's going to be over. I'm going to be the one that stopped it. But wait a minute here. I kept that streak going for 30 years. So, yeah. I'm done apologizing. I'm not going to apologize for it. Let's put it that way.
No apologies necessary. And the name Schwinn can still be found and remain synonymous with bicycling, not just here in Wisconsin or the United States, but for that matter, around the world. So it's a legacy that continues and persists. Richard Schwinn is our guest, co-founder of Waterford Precision Cycles in Waterford, served as president for 30 years before closing the factory in June. And I'll call it a semi-retirement the way he describes it. Schwinn is a great-grandson of Ignaz Schwinn, who started the company back in the 19th century, the company that would become Schwinn Bicycle Company. And you can join our conversation or add your thoughts. Tell us about your favorite Schwinn this morning at 800-642-1234. Or if you were fortunate enough to have one of those Waterford Precision Cycles, 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're talking with Richard Schwinn. He's co-founder and president of Waterford Precision Cycles before semi-retiring and closing the Waterford Bike Factory in June. And we're inviting you to our conversation at 800-642-1234, where Tom in Madison is standing by. Tom, good morning. You're on the air with Richard Schwinn.
Good morning, Lee and Richard. I'm approaching retirement myself. I've always been an avid cyclist, and growing up, my family had a number of Schwinn bicycles. I always find it so heartwarming when I'm out and about walking my dog or whatever, and I happen upon a yellow Schwinn Latour just a couple of days ago. It obviously, you know, got picked up at a garage sale or some sort of environment like that. But the person has lovingly restored it and is still riding it. And, you know, now all of our bikes are coming from China. And I just wish there was as much of a federal push to revive the bicycle industry as there is to, you know, invest in battery technology. Because we were all riding without batteries, and, you know, we didn't have as much diabetes and heart disease.
Well, Tom, we had a coworker here at Wisconsin Public Radio who recently posted a picture internally here about that showed a bike rack with four classic Schwinns all tied up to it, still being used. It would consider bikes renewable energy. And you know, Richard, in the late 90s, that Waterford employed about 30 people. They're building BMX bikes in there. In the 2010s, Waterford built touring roads, cyclocross, mountain bikes under its own brands and for other companies. What would you say distinguished a Waterford-made bicycle, a U.S.-made bike, from ones built elsewhere?
Well, probably the biggest thing that we've done is we have been able to customize and design bikes for very specific niches. So oftentimes the bikes that we're building are bikes that are not available from larger scale manufacturers. The competition that we get from overseas is usually mass production competition. And it used to be a lot of the mass production competition was right here in the United States, people like Huffy and Murray. 1995, when we liberalized trade with China, they were the immediate victims of that, and both had to reorganize. But it's the bicycles benefit very much from economies of scale, and that is a reality. People in Madison, and today there's a growing recognition of bicycles in their role as a source of health, alternative transportation, improvement to the environment. Go back 50 years, that wasn't the case. Bicycles were a toy. And so for most of the bicycle world, you know, the idea that it was something that was so important and so key to our economy that we had to build them locally, that was a foreign idea. In fact, bicycles, even going back to the 1950s, were the sacrificial lamb in trade negotiations with Europe. And so there was no protection granted there, even though there was protection granted to industries like the automobile industry, which were considered more strategic. And that's just the way it goes. The bicycle has long been the stepping stone to industrialization. You want to learn how to build cars, you got to start by building bikes. You want to learn how to build aircraft, you start by building bikes. And so, you know, when Japan was rebuilding from World War II, the bicycle became a way for them to help build the skills to reindustrialize after the war. And the Japanese became really successful in the 70s. The Taiwanese looked at that and they followed suit and they encouraged the development of bicycles and subsidized the industry until they could build it up. But the skills that were built in building bikes have allowed them to move into other industries. The same cycle happened in China. And today, interestingly enough, that this cycle is now moving to places like South Asia and Southeast Asia. And one of my friends was over in China probably 6 years ago, and they were talking to their Chinese counterparts. They bought Chinese product, and they're going, well, you've got to look at good, reliable Chinese product. You can't buy this cheap stuff out of Vietnam. So it's just part of a cycle that's gone on. And at this point, even if we built every bicycle that was made in this country, you probably build them with less than 10,000 people. And that's not nearly as strategic an industry as, let's say, the automobile industry, which employs 500,000 people. So it's never been seen as an opportunity to as something to be protected. And it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. In our case, in order to continue to compete, we have to find the places that didn't really exist yet, or that have been shunned by the mass market, but still have a niche. And that's one of the areas where we've been very helpful. In fact, we've been ahead of the curve on products that have come later. Today, if you look at the bike market, The big products, the big growth market is in a category called gravel bikes. And our first gravel bike came out in 1995. And we've long been a proponent of what we call broad spectrum bikes, bikes that are not just narrowly focused. And so we started building at the time a model called a cyclocross bike. But by the time gravel bikes started to come in, and we just started to see hints of it back about 2012, the people who were running the gravel races looked at our crosshairs and said, that's really great. Now, today there's technology that exists and that we integrated, disc brakes, through axle designs, wider gear ranges, things like that, that have made the model slightly different, but philosophically it's the same model. And we've always felt like that we've always been proponents of that kind of thinking, and a lot of our customers have had the same approach. By contrast, a lot of companies have focused on very narrowly defined bikes. Probably the narrowest defined bike are the triathlete bikes. Mm. You know, very specific one event bike. And so everything is optimized. So a Tour de France bike, a bike that's optimized for the Tour de France. But those aren't necessarily bikes that are rideable by a lot of people. And we feel that we've always felt that if you buy a Waterford or a Gunner, and I'm sure that our private label customers would take the same approach, that you are not just buying a bike, but you are making an investment in your riding future. And so I don't, you know, I look at the even though we've stopped building bikes, our bikes are going to be ridden long past my path to the grave. So,
hey, Richard, I really appreciate you joining us this morning, and enjoy your retirement.
Thanks.
Richard Schwinn co-founded Waterford Precision Cycles in Waterford and served as president for 30 years before he closed the factory in June. And Richard is the great-grandson of Ignaz Schwinn, who started in 1895 what would become the Schwinn Bicycle Company. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.